Blog Talk Radio.
It might be crazy wearing stripes of pride. I Instagram every meal I've had.
Oh my.
Welcome, and I, for one, am looking forward to getting some smiles and some laughs and really just having a fun night. And hello, Afasiana. How's it going?
Hi, Pam. Doing all right. How are you?
Well, I'm all in all pretty good. I have to tell you, though, three minutes before the show was going to start, I heard this horrible blood-curdling scream outside.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, it turns out we're pretty sure, me and my daughter are pretty sure, because we listened to it, that it was like a coyote that had possibly gotten its foot in a trap or something.
Oh.
But it just sounded, and the dogs were all barking and getting riled up, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, like that is the freakiest sound ever. And of course, not that it would do any good, but I had to turn on the porch light and look outside and without actually letting the dogs out, because goodness only knows what they would have done. Gotten themselves into trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, that's for sure. And But yeah, I, you know, it's been a while since I've done a humor poetry show, so I'm like I said, I'm really looking forward to this. And it's always interesting to me how different countries and even different areas of different countries have different kinds of humor. You know what I mean? Like the British are more known for their dry and dry humor. You know, what somebody finds funny in Wisconsin might not be the same in California, you know. And I imagine it's got to kind of be that way, too, up in your area in Canada.
Yeah, I would say so. Most of my life I spent in Ontario, and now I live in British Columbia, and they're pretty different. I mean, I don't know. I have kind of a weird sense of humor in general, so I don't know if I fit anywhere, but I definitely notice a difference between the different sides of the country.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yep. Well, very cool. And, all right, well, what do you say? You want to
dive in?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah, might as well.
All right, the first one on the list is by Chris Duffy, and it's called The Talking Dog. So I'll give this one a read. I saw the creature advertised in the local daily news, a bargain basement offer that I could not refuse, a lovely pet for company that I could take for walks. According to the advert, this Labrador could talk. I rang the seller right away and was invited to inspect the dog and its accessories and papers from the vets. The seller lived in Seven Oaks, a little town in Kent, so off I jumped into my car and down the road I went. The journey took me hours, and I didn't know the way, but I was so intrigued to learn what Rover had to say. I didn't mind the traveling. In fact, I would have walked to be the first to witness a Labrador that talked. My mind was working overtime about all the cash I'd make. When we've made a million, I'll buy the dog a steak. And if I'm feeling generous, because sometimes I do, I'll get a bag of oven chips, and I will have one too. I finally reached the seller's house, and he took me to the hound. He said he wanted rid of it and asked for £15. I told him, "Hang on, buddy. I'm not as daft as I appear. I want to test the merchandise. Some words I'd like to hear." He left me with the mutt, and a silence filled the place, and I could feel the goosebumps on my back and on me face. The dog looked rather gormless and sat there in its bed. I was feeling disappointed when suddenly it said, "Good evening, my name is Rex. Tell me, what is yours?" "I believe you are a northerner. That's not your fault, I'm sure. Hurry up and pay the man, and together we will head up the road to Lancaster, home in time for bed." I stood there flabbergasted, heart racing, double beats. I found my fame and fortune, a Labrador that speaks. Then I thought, let's just hang on. It could be a clever trick. That fella's a ventriloquist. I'm not that bloody thick. So I looked the dog straight in the eyes and questioned him some more. He told me about his army days in the Secret Service Corps. He spent some time behind the lines in Russia's web of fear, then swapped the cold for warmer climes spying in Korea. He'd always been a talking dog since he was a pup. Talking just came naturally. It was the way he was brought up. His father was a singer in a barber shop quintet. He began to sing soprano after visiting the vet. They sang in local public bars, coffee shops, and clubs. Him, his dad, and dear old mom, a corgi and a pug. He later joined the police force and worked at Scotland Yard, but working on the flying squad was for a dog quite hard. He couldn't get to work on time, and the sergeant used to moan. By the time he'd put his boots on, it was time for going home. I paid the fella right away and put Rex on his lead and wondered if I'd make more cash if I allowed the dog to breed. Rex and I were heading out along the garden path when curiosity got the better of me. I simply had to ask. I told the man he was a fool for selling Rex so cheap. He didn't see the value of a Labrador that speaks. The man just laughed and shook his head and said, to my surprise, "I sold the dog for 15 quid because he's always telling lies."
Oh, that was great. And before I comment, though, I would like to go ahead and bring somebody on who may or may not be Naomi. Let's find out. Hello, area code 111. You're on the air. Who are we speaking to?
Yes, it's me. It's me.
It is. Okay, Naomi. Awesome. I had another 111 call in earlier to Rex's show, and I said, "Hello, Naomi. Welcome to the show." And there was just complete silence. And I was like, "Hello?"
It was a male voice.
It was not
a man's voice.
It was actually not a man's voice. It was It was a woman, fairly new. Heart something is her name. I can't remember, but she's in LNP. So yeah, but it was nice to have somebody new call in. But you could just tell that it was like they're probably thinking, "What the heck?" Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, I have to say it made me smile to see Rex's name in a poem. You know, I like how, like this is a classic joke about a talking dog. Like, we've all seen the joke about the talking dog, and it always has a little twist at the end, like, "I'm selling him because he's always telling lies." But what I really like is that he extended it. He brought it into a story. You can also tell, like, that he's from the area of Great Britain by the different towns that he mentions, like Kent and Lancaster, or however say it. I know I'm slightly off. I like, "Good evening, my name is Rex. Tell me what is yours. I believe you are a northerner. Not your fault, I'm sure. Hurry up and pay the man, and together we will head up to the road." You know, I like how instantly the dog shows himself to be the brains of the operation. And then I love the, immediately there's going to be personification when there's a talking dog involved. But the fact that he personified him into one of those people that has always got to be the center of attention, always got to be one-upping everybody else and telling the grand stories. You know, I thought that was just very clever and very well done. And Naomi, you get a chance to hear or to read that poem.
Half of it there, a bit. I liked the last line. "I sold the dog for 15 quid because he's always telling lies." I think it was the man that was telling the lies. a dog that can speak, but from what I read, it was a great write, great little story he told. He's funnier, quite funny.
Oh, absolutely, it was. It was a great story. You're absolutely right, And Afasiana, share your thoughts with us and then bring us on to the next poem.
I thought it was cute. The lies part makes sense because, I mean, like, so much was going on. I mean, not only is it a dog who talks, but he's telling, like, all of these tales of, like, being in Russia and spying in Korea and doing all this. I'm like, for this one little dog, I don't think so. But it's such an action-packed life. And then he's just making up stories. It was fun. It had a really nice cadence to it. Like, I enjoyed reading it. It had that, the meter and flow that worked really well. There are some internal rhymes that happened that worked out really nice. This was a fun piece. For the next poem, it's by Steve Kane. And Naomi, why don't you read that one?
Okay. The Nerd. "I'm just a nerd. Don't you see? Black rim glasses. No goatee. The nearest thing to a tattoo is a coffee burn from looking at you. Haven't you heard? Can't you see? There are benefits to a nerd like me. They're just for fun. Those muscle buffs. Oh, can't you be with a nerd in love? I am Peter Parker, no Superman, no Incredible Hulk. I'm Banner Man. I will wave, holding the words up high. I am a nerd. Don't pass me by. I'll wait for you. I have time for you to use your wisdom. Get those bad boys out of your system, because when the time comes, you'll see all you need is a nerd like me. Bad boys are bad, can't you see? I am waiting in the wings with my cape. I'll be your superhero. Let's escape. You'll find me here for you, patiently waiting with my coffee tattoo. I am Peter Parker, no Superman, no Incredible Hulk. I'm Banner Man. I will wave, holding the world, birds up high. I am a nerd. Don't pass me by. End poem.
Great read there, Naomi. I have to say this one was quite fun and clever. I really enjoyed it. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
I really enjoyed this. I'm a nerd myself, and I also like superheroes, so I like that. The Peter Parker, not Superman, so he's kind of like the scrawny guy who becomes Spider-Man, but is not even Spider-Man himself, but Peter Parker, his when he's normal. And then my favorite part is the no Incredible Hulk, I'm Banner Man, because the Incredible Hulk is Bruce Banner. So Bruce Banner is when he's kind of like the scientist guy, and then when he gets angry, he becomes the Hulk and gets strong but is out of control. So he's not the Hulk, he's Banner. And at the beginning it says Hunk, and then later on it says Hulk. So no Incredible Hulk, I'm Banner Man, and then no Incredible Hulk, capital H, I'm Banner Man. So it confirms my suspicion that when he's talking about no Incredible Hulk, he's talking about no Incredible Hulk. But the thing is that hunks are often hulks, in my experience. The super hot testosterone guys also are often the jerks. So he's like, I'm not the hunk, but I'm also not the Hulk. I'm not the crazy angry guy. I'm Banner. I thought that was really clever, and I love nerds. So, yay.
Awesome comment. Yeah, I really liked you brought up the Hulk and the hunk and the whole idea of, yeah, I'm not, you know, overdoing it on the steroids. I'm not going to go into some sort of roid rage. I too thought that part was really clever. So great comment there. And Naomi, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I think, yeah, there's truth in this, you know. I've been with quite a few men, and you know, the nerdy types are, you know, they're, you know, if you get a guy who reads and, you know, is into literature and into, you know, more sophisticated movies that actually have depth in them. You know, I take, like, I don't know, Schindler's List, for example, which is one of my favorite movies. And, you know, you can talk about stuff, and they know their geography, and they know their politics, and, you know, they know a bit. Well, here in Quebec, I have a hard time finding a guy that knows at least Edgar Allan Poe. But you know, when you get one of those, you hang on to them, because, you know, they're conversation material, not just, you know, bed material.
Right.
So, you know, yeah. So, you know, they're great, you know, and, you know, one doesn't go without the other, you know, so you never know. And, you know, so you don't pass by those nerds because, you know, and usually they make more money anyway. So.
Oh, that is a really good point. Yeah.
And, you know, so, yeah, I thought this was a really good little piece here. Bravo.
It really is. It really is. And you make some great points about if you have to find a man that you can hold a conversation with. I mean, nothing wrong with some good loving in the bedroom, but if you have a man who is intelligent, because intelligence is sexy, you can make conversation with, and particularly likes poetry, you know, then definitely hold on to them. But I, too, really thought, you know, this was a great fun write with some really clever superhero references. You know, I really like how he says, bad boys are bad, can't you see? I am waiting in the wings with my cape. I'll be your superhero. And that whole idea of, you know, I you might not notice me, but I'm waiting here by the side. And so very cool, very excellent, right? And what do you got for us next, Afasiana?
Pam, can you read the one by Frank, Poetic Picasso?
I'll be happy to. All right, this is The Big Fool by Poetic Picasso, and it goes like this. What if everyone in this cocktail party could read my thoughts and knew all the odd things I was thinking? The woman with the big wig or the man with the big nose knew how much I could make a wreath from her hair or a coat hanger from his nose. What if the supposed connoisseur of wine knew I had thought of filling his glass with the insipid bit of spring shower? What would the servants do if I put glue on the carpet the guest entered so they polished their shoes would stick like slimy mucus? Or what if I plucked out the eyebrows or took out the teeth of the old Earl chewing food with a pair of steel tweezers? Or used a hairpin to awake the snoring duchess sleeping in the settee? Or put lacquer on her husband's parted hair? I could put a fork in the tongue of the garrulous nobleman from Paris to stop him from prating. I would take the Cuban cigar from the American ambassador's mouth and burn his hideous bow tie. If I dared to do these things, I would be acknowledging my boredom and lack of savoir-faire as a Victorian. To make them fret and entertain myself with such delightful diversion would make the night of this engagement even more exciting. Oh, I know it's wicked to think these things, but I can't help to have the witty need to laugh at them with my satire. So I got the courage to gain the attention of all and to tell them how tedious they were and how much of an arse they were. But something unusual happened before I could tell them I had torn my trousers completely. I realized then I was not wearing any underwear, and everyone had noticed that except me, the big fool, the caricature. Indeed, it was a full moon they saw, so I suppose the joke was on them, and I was the one with the wry humor. There is only one thing in life worse than being talked about, and that is being not talked about. End poem. Oh, and I'm the one leading comments. Oh, geez. Okay.
I well, know, after you read a poem, right?
It happens that way to me, too. Yes, like you read a poem and, you know, you're just silent, waiting for the person to leave a comment, and you're not freaking doing it. So, Naomi, let's start with your thoughts.
Yeah, well, I find it so funny the way he, you know, he talks about all these people, you know. There's one line, oh, the first line there, the woman with the big wig or the man with the big nose knew how much I could make a wreath from her hair or a coat hanger from his nose. And then, you know, to have the split pants at the end, you know, without any underwear. You know, that's just funny. And, you know, this ending line, too, is great, too. This is a fantastic write all through Frank, and it's so great to see him write something different, you know, something humorous. We're not used to that. Well, at least I'm not used to it. And wow, he does a great job out of it. Bravo, Frank.
Yeah, I have to say that I've been getting to see, like, yesterday he read a humorous write on Gray's show. You know, tonight he's got the humorous write. I've definitely got to see some pieces of his sense of humor. And it's really cool because it's an intelligent sort of wit. And this is one of his Oscar Wilde pieces, which he has a list of like 72 of them. And I highly recommend people check them out. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
I thought this was really funny. I liked the way he described everyone, and I like that he said at one point it's caricatures, because that's exactly what it sounds like. It's that kind of exaggerated, fun version of it. And then he's thinking about, like, doing the pranks, which is fun. And except the slimy mucus was gross, but it's still fun. And then the karma of it being everyone laughing at him, because he's the one who is exposed, is a nice twist. And there is a lot of wisdom in that last line. There is only one thing in life worse than being talked about, and that is not being talked about. I kind of wonder if that line is a quote from Oscar Wilde.
It is.
It sounds like something. Yeah, okay.
It is.
But yeah, Frank does such a good job of channeling Oscar Wilde that sometimes I can't tell which is which.
Right. Yeah, the only reason I knew for sure is because Rex had used it in a contest as a prompt before. So I recognized it from there. But yeah, you know, and I think it has a great punch to end on an Oscar Wilde quote, because it really helped play into the idea that he was channeling, as you say, the voice of Oscar Wilde. And yes, slimy mucus is definitely gross imagery, but this is just really great, great fun, great humor. I really liked, there's a lot of wonderful lines in here, but what if the supposed connoisseur of wine knew I had thought of filling his glass with an insipid bit of my spring shower? That was great. I also really like where he brings the Victorian society into this. If I dared to do these things, I would be acknowledging my boredom and lack of savoir-faire as a Victorian. Because even though all these Victorians had a whole lot of sins they were doing behind each other's backs, it was never talked about up front. So I thought that was really clever, too. And very well done, Frank. And what do you got for us next, Afasiana?
There's one by Pink Fairy 5, so I'm going to give that one a read. Welcome to the Annual Marble Race by Pink Fairy 5. The annual marble race is on. The course is set. Lots of obstacles. Who will come out the winner? Blue team, red team, yellow team. Green team has already begun to gloat, claiming the win. Their arrogance intact, they have always pumped themselves up. The sky is blue. The fluff clouds promised an upbeat, happy, clear day. Coach blows into a pink whistle. crowd cheers immediately. Cheerleaders do a risque dance that embarrasses their grandfathers. We never acted like that in our day, their prissy grandmothers lie. They did, just in private, not in front of a whole crowd of clappers. The marbles round the bend, and they are making a rapid descent. Someone yells, "They are cheating!" It is Sprinkle from the blue team. Blue team loses a point for bad sportsmanship. Red team's captain reminds her team to not yell anything. The referees are quick to jump on yellers. They do not like them. Someone who did not hear yells that yellow team is a bunch of losers. Red team loses a point. The captain glares at the yeller. Green team knocks other teams into oblivion before the finish line. "Is that fair?" someone yells from the stand. The cheerleaders go wild. Coach of red team punches the coach of green team in the nose. Referees announce there are no winners due to bad sportsmanship. It is no different than last year or the year before. Why these marbles cannot be nice to each other is a mystery. The granddaughters are kicking their legs in Rockettes fashion, not understanding the game any better than anyone else. End poem.
Great read, Aphasiana. I say the Pink Fairy 5 poem definitely calls for your ability to put the right pause, pitch, and punch into a poem. She has a real gift for storytelling and especially for humorous storytelling. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I often played marbles when I was young, so I can relate to this. And it's funny how she took the marbles and she put it into like an annual big affair here, you know, because marbles, you have to knock out each of the other person's marbles, you know, and that's the goal of the game. And and she puts it in like such a big affair, you know, and the people yelling, and she just captivated the whole atmosphere so grandly here, you know, and put it in. Made it into almost like a horse race, you know, something really grandiose there. So this is really neat. I really liked it.
Absolutely. I'm glad you mentioned that, how she made it kind of like the announcer at like a horse race or, you know, another like big game, like football or anything like that, except for definitely isn't like a golf game. Oh my gosh, I swear to goodness, that just watching golf on TV makes me want to go to sleep or at least, you know, go find something else to do. But yeah, it was really clever how, like you said, she made it just really grandiose. So great comment there. And Aphasiana, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
It was so fun. I really liked the way it says their prissy grandmothers lie. we never did that, but yes, they did. the emphasis on the colors was interesting because sometimes there was wordplay. The team is glaring at the yeller, and so like yeller as in the person who was yelling, but I kind of felt like he was also glaring at the yellow team, like the yellers, like as if it has like kind of an accent there. I thought that she really created the atmosphere of sports, and sometimes like especially say high school sports where the people in the fans are not in the audience are not necessarily sports fans. Sometimes it's just like the thing to do is you go out and it's like I don't know, I never went because I was just a weirdo. But it was like the popular thing to do, to go cheer on the sports teams. But I like how it says the cheerleaders don't understand it better than anyone else, because you know, sometimes they don't. They're not actually into the sport. They're there for their own reasons. So I just thought that was funny of, nobody understands what's going on. And this is talking about marbles, but I think sometimes it applies to other things too. There's this really funny parody video by Garfunkel and Oates, I think, and it's called Sports Go Sports. And it's like these girls are going to a party with some guys, and it's just like a football party, and they don't actually know what's happening. I think it's the Super Bowl, and they're just like, go sports. If they're supposed to cross a line, I hope they do. And, like, I don't know, they just kind of, like, randomly cheer things. It's like, you have to hear it. I can't do it. But it's hilarious. And they're like, sports, go sports. Because they don't know who they're supposed to be cheering for, or, like, what is the moment where you're supposed to cheer. So they just kind of, like, randomly do stuff, and it's hilarious. So that this just made me think of that, where it's like all the excitement, but not really following the sport itself.
Yes, yeah, but I'll have to find that and watch that, because that just sounds hysterical. And just like you, I really liked that part where it says, we never acted like that in our day. Your prissy grandmothers lie. They did, just in private. That was really awesome. This has great humor, storytelling. I really like how this is just that big old knockout game of marbles with the different coaches. And, I also really like the end line, the granddaughters are kicking their legs in rocket fashion, not understanding the game any better than anyone else. And that is so true. So true. If you're not a fan, like, if you're a major fan of sport, like my sister is a huge hockey fan. Like, I actually got her a Beanie Baby one year for Christmas that are the Maple Leafs, the Montreal Maple Leafs. Yeah, I think that's it, yeah. I think that's it. But, yeah, huge hockey fan. She can go to a hockey – she goes with a hockey fan with her husband and their kids, and they all know hockey. And they all know what exactly is going on, and I'm just, like, clueless. But, yeah, it's this this is just an awesome write and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Afasiana?
There is one by William A. Pendragon. Naomi, would you read that?
Yeah. You have been bad, Anang, Anrama. And this is a Halloween comic. To the prompt, when you have to put your demon on a timeout. Mummy has given you a timeout, Anang. You know the rules. Don't drool. For every year old, you have 2 minutes to do. Do the math. You were born 1672. 449 times 2, 898. Are you happy? You must sit for 14 hours and 8. You know Mum's friends. They cannot be 8. And poem.
Great read, Naomi. Oh, my gosh. I am such a big fan of dark humor. And that it fits dark humor. I like the picture he wrote, too, where it says, when you have to put your demon on a timeout. And he mixes dark humor and mythology with real life because, well, he refers to 2 minutes, but I've always heard it, you know, as a parent or, you know, an auntie or whoever you are having to give a kid a timeout, that it's 1 minute per age. So instantly, you know, right there, here's somebody who knows something about kids or has done a little reading and research about in kids.
But the fact that he turns it on its head with, do the math, you were born 1672, and the picture too cracks me up, like that he wrote mm-hmm. you in the demon all tied up and gagged and the woman shaking her finger, you know, mom's friends, they cannot be eight. Punchline ending that really just, it made me laugh and brought a smile to my face. Very cool, very well done. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
I agree. I love that ending. I love when people use homonyms in that way, eight and eight, where the number has come up, and then now it's eight, as in beaten. And I think that is just such a great way to end it with that wordplay.
Oh, I have to agree. I'm glad you pointed that out, the wordplay with the words that sound the same but are spelled differently and have different meanings. Very cool. And Naomi, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I just love the counting in it. You know, it makes it all that more funny. And, you know, and that ending, you know, mom's friends, they cannot be eight. So keep quiet and keep, you've been a naughty person. You eight, mom, my mom's friends. So this was just fun, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I have to agree. Awesome comment there. And what do you got for us next, Phoebe?
There's one by Chef Tony for you to read, Pam.
All right. This is the 14th hole by Chef Tony. And it goes like this. Early one Midwest autumn day, I went golfing with my wife. It was always so much fun to play until I almost lost my life. We teed off on the back nine, started bad and just got worse. We carted up to T14, began to swing rehearse. A 200-yard drive to a 90-foot bluff, unless I ended up with my ball in the rough. Next to my 7-iron, then 2 putts, I hope, a fence on the cliff, 2 posts and a rope. I drove the ball, and that went well. When driving the cart, things went to hell. I crested the slope but didn't see. Mother Nature had another plan for me. Accelerated with my foot off the gas, brake blocks, wheels, wet leaves, and grass. As I spun backward, I thought to myself, I'm not going to die falling off this shelf. I drove from the cart and landed in the dirt. It ran over my ankles, which kind of hurt. The rope caught a wheel. The posts were bent. Before I could stand off the cliff, I went. I said to my wife, doesn't that beat all? I lost my cart, but I found my ball. I didn't make par. That's my loss. My cart made birdie, eagle, albatross. I haven't golfed since. I've no desire. I sold my clubs to the highest buyer. As for my story, I've no need to linger. I tried golf, and I gave it the finger. End poem. that was really fun and clever, and just really great rhyme. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
I agree. It was really fun. I like the way that the rhymes played out, and it has a nice cadence rhythm to it. I dove from the cart and landed in the dirt. It ran over my ankle, which kind of hurt. Just talk about downplaying it. Like, you know, you've been run over by a cart, and it kind of hurts. just the casual way that it's described is funny. I think the funniest part for me was I lost my cart, but I found my ball. I don't know. Just the idea of, like, you lose the giant thing, but the little one that's more common to lose. You got that one. I loved that line.
That was awesome. And I have to agree, the whole nonchalant attitude of the, that kind of hurt. But I suppose it kind of hurt compared to falling off a cliff, you know. And, but yeah, and that end about the whole enthusiastic, like, or not end, but, you know, where it said, yep, I may have lost my cart, but guess what? I found my ball. Yeah. That was pretty awesome. So great comment there, Faisy. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I really liked the line that he didn't make the par, but his cart did make a birdie, an eagle, and an albatross. So, you know, well, the cart made more points than he, well, in golf, it's less points than you win there. But, you know, the par is making the hole in the number of hits that you do. And a birdie is making one less. An eagle is making two less. And in the albatross, well, that's, you know, making it almost impossible. So, you know, the cart made a better score than he did. So that was really funny. And, yeah, and I tried golf again, and I gave it the finger. That's a great ending. So it's a neat poem on playing golf, which I do.
It really
so.
Is. It yeah. really is. Yep, and I like how the end line about the finger has a duality in its meaning, like the whole idea of just sticking your middle finger up, but also the idea that maybe in the fall, like, he lost his finger. So it's some wonderful twisted humor.
I was thinking the same thing about the losing a finger. That's awesome.
Oh, my gosh. But I like, Naomi, how you brought up that the different golf terms that are in here, and what I like about this poem is that for anybody that plays golf and knows the term or just happens to know the terms, they're really going to appreciate how well thought out this poem was and the humor of it. But I think even for people who don't play golf, they're still going to appreciate the humor in it. I know. Yeah. Well, and some of these I did know. But yeah, they just definitely great humor. I drove the ball that went well. When driving the cart, things went to hell. And, you know, that was just instantly the whole thing grabs your attention, but that line, you start to think, okay, it's going to get interesting. So just really a fun write and great humor and very well done. All right. And Faisy, what do you got for us next?
There's one by L.M. Stevens that I'm going to read. I Bet You Smell Like Coffee by L.M. Stevens. I bet you smell like coffee smothered in gin. Oh, how I like your fair alabaster skin. Your hair so thick, slick, and beautifully brown. Your taunting blue eyes, oh, how they glimmer when you smile. I would love to kiss, suck, and nip that watermelon pink bottom lip. Dude, you making a black girl blush. White boy, you need to quit. I bet you're kinky, freaky, and adventurous in bed. You got that good guy, boy next door, an innocent charm, that kind of look that tells a girl you do no harm. But once behind the scenes, you'd probably make a girl scream, taunting her body, making her twist and turn, bend her to your will. What she doesn't know, she surely will learn. I bet you smell like coffee smothered in vodka. Perhaps you'll bend me over your lap, slap my rear, and make me call you Papa. You make me blush when I see your pictures, Mr. Hollywood. You can smile and laugh all you want, but I know you're up to no good. That furred face, arms, and chest. Oh, my, I do digress. What were you saying? Pardon me while I breathe. Why, I've been holding my breath. I bet you are the king of your castle, a righteous and gentle ruler who treats your girl like a queen, for the bedroom is the only place you're probably mean. So what is a girl to do? Is there really a point to this lust? I'll never get to touch or smell you. I guess this little fangirl will keep spamming pictures of you across the net because that's about as close to you as she'll ever get. Dedicated to Chris Evans and Paul.
Great, Rita Faziana, and I tell you, what a wonderful point of view from a fangirl. Very cool, right? And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, she really went on a went on a hike here after the guy. She's really into him. Makes me think of my granddaughter says she said to her mother the other day, "I'm gonna get married 9 times." Because she has all these fans, you know. She has all these guys in these movies that she likes. So she says, "I'm gonna get married 9 times." So that really made me laugh. And so this poem here, I like. I bet you're kinky, freaky, and adventurous in bed. You got that good guy, boy next door. I'm innocent charm, the type of look that tells a girl you do no harm. And then once behind the scenes, she goes down. And then the ending, you know, I'll keep spamming pictures of you across the net because that's about as close to you that she'll ever get, you know. So, dedicated to Chris Evans. This is a great little read there. I just enjoyed it.
Oh, it absolutely is. And I, too, also really liked that stanza. I bet you're kinky and freaky and adventurous in bed. You know, so a great comment there. And Faziana, your thoughts?
It was a fun one to read. It had, again, a nice flow to it. I was curious where it was going. At one point when it said, like, the furry face, I was like, uh-oh, where's this? But it did get a beard. I'm like, this could go in different directions. It was really fun. It definitely has that kind of fangirl enthusiasm. Chris Evans is pretty hot. I agree, and this is
definitely. This is
a fun take on the enthusiasm for the celebrity.
Oh yep, exactly, and you're right. It did have that enthusiasm to it, and I like how she says things like, "I bet you smell like coffee smothered in gin. I bet you smell like coffee smothered in vodka." You know, it's like that whole idea of I bet you're wildly intoxicating and you're going to give me a high at the same time. And, you know, just a really fun write. I did like that ending, too. I guess this little fangirl will keep spamming pictures of you across the net. So excellent write and very well done. And what do we got next, Phoebe?
Now we have one by Betty Page. Naomi, would you read that one?
Yeah, I kind of lost the page here. I'm all mixed up. Shoot. Can you
get
somebody else to read it? Because until I get back to the page, I kind of press on the X there. I erased all the pages on my computer.
That's all right. Pam, you can take the lead.
All right. This is Playboy Pink Bunnies and the Acid Queen by Betty Page. And it goes like this. Pink ballerina attire, heavy metal sound, distorted chaos illuminating from the higher ground. My brain is swirling and the music spinning round and round, dancing bears gratefully and rainbows blooming, each note's pound. Candy chronic lollipops, lickably sweet, tasty Gatorade. Mountain Dew, Slurpee, sipping on ice in Ocean Park shade, hydroponic plants, sticky sweet smoke, hot like cool lemonade, intriguing carnival rides, alluring sounds as we're getting laid, Venice pizza munchies drowned with some fine champagne, dancing on chandeliers on Sunset Strip with Hollywood vampires, rainbow drinks beneath rainbow light, beneath neon lights that melt in pleasurable pain, Snow White, Desire, Studio 54, Disco Ball, Warhol installed, studio wires, love to love me, baby, driving in painted love machines, smoking hot, vicious, infamous, mischievous, so vividly in your face. On the cover of Hugh Hefner's Playboy Bunny glossy magazines, centerfold diamonds crushed on mirrors in fuzzy pink handcuffs at your place, and poem. And I have to say, I remember that she wrote this about a year ago for a Share the Laughter Cheech and Chong show, and I have to say that I really enjoyed reading this one again. Great fun. And Faviana, your thoughts?
It's trippy. I feel high just reading it.
Right?
The images. The way all the different flavors just flow together, too. Candy Chronic Lollipops, Lickably Sweet, Tasty Gatorade, Mountain Dew, Slurpee, Sipping on Ice of Ocean Park, a shape, like, wow. I'm lost in a swirl of colors and tastes there. Hot, like, cool lemonade is an interesting thing, the contrast of the hot and the cool lemonade. And the idea of sticky, sweet smoke, because I would not think of smoke as sticky or sweet. Mind you, I've never, like, smoked anything, so perhaps with certain things that you smoke, it is. I don't know. This is very trippy and fun. It creates a very colorful image in my mind. Like literally colors flying everywhere in the disco light. So it puts you in that setting.
Right. Yeah, well, I can imagine that, you know, if you're tripping on enough acid, smoke might actually start to be sticky, you know. And, I really like how, as you said, you get a high from reading this poem. There's so much bright imagery in here. And it's really, it just feels like an acid trip all the way through. I really liked the Venice pizza munchies dancing on chandeliers on Sunset Strip with Hollywood vampires. And then there she ends up dancing with Snow White Desires, Studio 54, Disco Ball, Warhol, installed studio wires. You know, to me, you just really get the whole idea that there's definitely more drugs than just pot smoking going on here, especially with the mention of the Snow White Desires. And, you know, very cool, very cool light. I really enjoyed this one. And Naomi, did you get a chance to? Well,
yeah, I'm back to it. And this is filled with imagery. Just pops, in your face. And like you said, it's like being on an acid trip all the way through, you know, like drunk and totally, you know, out of it. It's just like in your face, like all the way through. It's just amazing, amazing, brilliant, witty, two witty lines in here, you know, and just such a great imagination to come up with all this stuff. Just amazing there, Betty Page.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Great comments there. And Faviana, what do you got for us next?
I put up Naomi's poem, if you're ready to read Naomi.
Oh, boy, yeah. I took pieces out of this because it's really long. so I took pieces out of it to make it like a bit shorter there. Okay, so this is all those damn what was I thinking moments. It was just one of those crazy in the moment decisions. The kind that afterwards I always say, holy shit, Naomi, what were you thinking? Anyway, this was quite a few years ago, and I decided to fly out for a calm, relaxing time on a small island here in Quebec in the middle of the freaking winter. So I drive to this little coastal town to board the plane. You know, something that looked like a plane, a rusted, old, rundown thing. You know the kind where the pilot is sitting right in the kitchen with you? No separation, nothing, nada. Like hell, you can just walk over and press on any damn button and send the whole thing flying straight into the sea. Let's say flight attendants were not included on these flights. They probably weren't any crazy enough to accept the job anyway. And it stinks. Oh, my God, it stinks. I'm telling you right now, you could tell right away that more than a few had pissed all over themselves sitting in those seats right there. Well, that should have been enough to let me know, yeah, this is not such a great idea, but no, guess I need more convincing arguments. So I keep smiling, sitting in my seat, trying not to puke my brains out. All zen. All is fine with the world. Oh, yeah. The pilot starts the engines. And that's when I start being scared. Like, I mean, real scared. Because he starts cussing and hollering away. Damn plane. Bloody engine won't start again. Good for nothing piece of shit. Then he gets on this walkie-talkie thingy thing and calls. Oh, hell, I don't know where he calls. But he screams out, yeah, Bob, damn engine won't start again. Send over the guy. The guy. Well, the guy comes walking. Well, walking is not exactly the right verb here. He advances in kind of wild spasms, as if he's being kicked in the ass by a horse, going this way and that way and another kick and another jerk forward, like he has no damn idea what direction to take. He has a cigarette hanging from his lips, pants barely hanging on, half buttoned up shirt, coat open, like, come on, it's freezing out. His boots are dangling with untied laces, you know, the whole works. The whole I don't give a fuck look. You can tell right away, hey, the guy is no NASA engineer. He finally makes it to the side of the plane and pulls out this humongous wrench. I mean, this thing is huge. And he just starts hammering away at the engine, like bing, bang, and bang, bing, and just smashing the plane, swaying this way and that way. And now I'm way past the scare stage. Like, I'm really freaking out here. I just want to scream at him, oh, hell no. No, 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 stop. Hey, leave the darn thing alone. We're on the ground, for heaven's sakes. I don't want to end up in the air just to crash into some bushes a few seconds later. Hey, we can just roll this baby down the runway and onto a ferry and drift merrily across that friggin' island. Why not? Just put friggin' wrench down. But the engine finally huffs and puffs, coming back from the dead, and we are bumping along the runway and in the air. And the plane is jerking up and down, and I'm frozen into my seat praying to God, hey, I don't know you very much, sorry, but I really need you, so get your ass down here right away, right now. And I'm not the only one, because suddenly the old lady sitting next to me that I don't know from Adam, she latches onto my arm, stares at me with wide, scared shit eyes and whispers hauntingly, "I love you." Oh, yeah, I swear it creeped me out. And then she adds, "Wouldn't you have a piece of paper, a napkin, anything to write on? I don't have a will." And the poor thing, like, I can see she is just, she is just way past the freaking out stage. She has passed into inevitable acceptance here. And I really want to reassure her. So I smile and pat her hand and say, "Oh, don't worry, ma'am. If we crash, us and everything else, well, we'll all go up in flames anyway." And then I go, "Oh, holy shit, Naomi, what were you thinking?" as the poor old lady pisses all over herself. And
oh, my gosh. That was so great, Naomi. So great. I love humor that is reality, that is, you know, those oh shit moments in life. Totally relatable. Just awesome read. I'm so glad you brought this to the show. Great humor. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
I've been on little planes like that, and they are terrifying. But my favorite part of the poem is definitely the guy. That stanza that describes him walking towards the plane, the guy who's supposed to fix it, where walking is not exactly the right verb here. He advances in kind of wild spasm as if he's being kicked in the ass by a horse, going this way and that way and another kick and another jerk forward, like he has no damn idea what direction to take. Oh, my gosh. It's a good thing I was on mute because I was laughing so hard at that part. And just the way that you describe him, like his shirt's not bundled up properly, his boots are untied. How can you trust this guy to make everything, you know, perfectly aligned in an engine that clearly is not working? You see this guy, and it's just, oh, that whole stanza just absolutely killed me in the best way. Loved it.
Thank you.
I have to agree there. That the whole thing was funny, but yeah, that stands it particularly with the whole description of the guy. And I really like how you emphasize that part by saying the guy in all capital letters. And he finally makes it to the side of the plane and pulls out this humongous wrench. I mean, like, this thing is huge, and he just starts hammering away at the engine crack up part there. The plane is jerking up and down, and I'm frozen into my seat praying to God, "Hey, I don't know you very much, sorry, but I really need you to get your ass down here right away." It's so funny to me to poke fun at human nature, because it really is in our nature. If we're not regular prayers, we will become one. Oftentimes,
yeah.
In moments that we feel like we might just be ending our life. But, oh, my gosh, I love the way you started out. It's so relatable, because I, too, have had those holy shit moments. Holy shit, Naomi, what were you thinking at the end when you reached over to reassure the woman and said, "Oh, don't worry, ma'am, if we crash, us and everything else will just go up in flames anyways." Oh, my God, goodness, that just truly cracked me up. That was awesome. And is there anything you'd like to say about your poem, Naomi?
No, well, it was a bit longer. I described the airport, too, which was hilarious, because it was like a one-room, you know, like a classroom. And, you know, there was a secretary, and she'd say, you know, for boarding, go to door number one. And there was only one door, and it was a patio door.
Oh my gosh.
So I took out that part, you know, because it was really too long. But anyway, I had other parts in this. But so
well,
anyway.
I like that you did a longer write. And it really reminded me of that song. By, was it Arlo Guthrie, Alice's Restaurant Massacre? That
that Rex had a show on, it very much mm-hmm. reminded me of that style, to where there's kind of a trailing off and going on to different thoughts. And, you know, it very much had that style, and I liked it. So very cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. And what do you got for us next, Phoebe?
Now I'm going to read one by Nan529, and this is called I Want a Divorce. The prompt is, I never forget faces, but in your case, I'll gladly make an exception. Okay. So here's the poem. You know some people have no sense of humor. Take the other day, blue sky, as we walked into town. I said to my husband, I know what your ideal woman would like. Go on then, he said, tell me. Long blonde hair, big boobs, great legs. Don't forget nice arse, you said. You look at me, what's your ideal man then? That's easy. 12 inches, don't matter about the face. Boy, were you angry. You looked at me, yeah, will it take a little bottle of wine to get you going with a face like yours? Do you blame me? Let me tell you, I'm all out laughing. That's it, he said. I want a divorce. You're asking what's the moral of this tale? Here it is. If you don't want your other half to behave like a prick, then don't insult his wedding tackle. Simple.
Great. Awesome read there, Favy. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I love the way she responded to him, you know. You know, it's like she says, you know, the he likes the long blonde hair, big boobs, great legs, and then she says, well, I'll just take the 12 inches and don't matter about the face. I thought that part was hilarious. Just a great piece here.
Yeah, absolutely. I do really like that line. So I'm pretty sure if realistic expectations, you aren't going to find too many 12-inchers walking around.
No.
But that was a clever line and very cool. Excellent comment. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
It was fun. I like the ending. If you don't want your other half to behave like a prick, then don't insult his wedding tackle. But I actually think you could have just left it at don't insult his. that line in itself. If you don't want him to behave like a prick, then don't insult his.
Oh, that would have worked really well. Yeah. I did like that is an excellent observation. I did like that she used the phrase wedding tackle as a double entendre. But, yeah, it would have worked well just to say, you know, if you don't want your other half to behave like a prick, then don't insult his. I too liked that. I liked that there was this kind of back and forth of the husband and wife, you know, like being snarky with each other. I really thought it fit really well with the quote. Boy, were you angry? You looked at me. Yeah, it will take a bottle of wine to get you going. That, you know, there's just some nights you know you're either going to need a bottle of wine or whatever other gift it is that you're going to bring to beg forgiveness. So excellent fun write. Very well done. And what do you got for us next, Phoebe?
Now we have one by Rooster Cogburn. Can you read that one, Pam?
Absolutely. There's No Fool Like an Old Fool by Rooster Cogburn, and it goes like this. My old farm in need of new blood, a young bull and fresh workhorse, so to the town market I set forth. There I did spy a horse and a bull, haltered nearby some silly fool holding a rod over a water pool. Hey, clamp it, I hollered. Any bites? No, sir, I need a drink and a meal. So I took him to a bar to make a deal. Along with filet steak, he drank beer, 'cause cost me plenty, but I needed a break. For horse and bull, how much will it take? 100 apiece, said the plonker. And I thought to myself, that's a steal. Pay cash, then he said, with the deal. The steed likes his butt tickled. The bull, a real softy, if you pet him on the head. Loaded both on my cart, and off I fled. No sooner back at the ranch, hands on in the stable, tickled Big Lucky's buttocks, and the bad brute kicked me in the nuts. As for Benji the bull, I wiggled his curls like a ball from a cannon. I hit the roof, then both rascals took off to the on the hoof. Next day to the market, black and blue, no sign of Clampett, nor horse and bull. So into the diner to give off a mouthful. Hey, bartender, did you see that fool from yesterday? Yes, mister, he departed, paid his overdue tab, and just simply said, a fool and his money are easily parted. End poem. I really enjoyed this one. That was great humor, and it was originally written for a cowboy humor and wisdom contest that I did, and it was definitely one worth hearing again. Very cool. And Faviana, your thoughts?
It's fun. I think it's like slapstick humor. I can picture it as the cartoon or like a black and white movie, old school with like the, I can't even think what you would call that music where it's just like the dramatic like din 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 as he gets kicked. But then, like I don't know. I picture it as like an old school kind of slapstick routine that's really fun. I like the names that he gives everyone. I like that both rascals took off on the hoof. So the bull and the man, both rascals running away. And the way that he ends it is strong too. The plonker. I don't know, they just he has very fun language that really sets the tone and the place really well.
It does. And I've never heard the term plunker. I'm guessing it must be like an Irish term or something like that. But yeah, it did have very fun language and yeah, absolutely great comment. And Naomi.
Yeah, I just love Rooster's right. You know, he has this kind of humor, you know. And yeah, and I like just to go over to his page just to read some of them because they're so funny. And I like how he in the stable tickled Big Lucky's buttocks and the bad boot kicked me in the nuts. As for Benji the bull, I wiggled his curls like a ball from a can and I hit the roof. And then they took off down the road, you know. So he paid dinner, but he paid dinner and he lost his money. Yeah, that's for sure. So a great right from Rooster here.
Yeah, there was definitely a lesson to be learned in that one, this one. And well, that's what I like about this poem is that it has both humor and a wisdom in it, especially the lesson learned at the end. I like to Faviana how you mentioned that it has that slapstick comedy feel because it does. It has, you know, you can just picture everything that's happening. So definitely. And, you know, and I do, too, like, no sooner back at the ranch, hands on in the stable, tickled Big Lucky's buttocks, and the bad brute kicked me in the nuts. Just clever lines there and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Phoebe?
I have one by Steve Kane for Naomi to read.
Okay. The Blue Hair Brigade. A supermarket sweepstake. Or maybe rugby scrum Thursday afternoon, getting shopping done, walking through the electric doors just past the peas, when a blue-haired brigade pensioner brought me to my knees. Basket right before her, handbag on one side, she swung round to grab some veg, bringing tears to my eyes. Silver wheels on granny's heels, whizzing up the aisles, screaming kids and chatting mums, stand parked by baked bean piles. No one seems to give a care or get out of the way, some sort of hypnotic trance on their go-slow holiday. Off to a land of two for one, or buy one, get one free, both seem very much the same when you take the time to read. Pushing along my trolley, three wheels, one astray, weaving through the shoppers, blood boiling away. I look back over my shoulder at the stock car race behind. There stood 30 grannies in determined grimaced face, waiting for the checkered flag to begin their frantic race. Someone dropped a box of eggs. False start, but they were off. Basket trolleys all over the place in a blur of corduroy cloth. Grabbing for the toilet rolls, bonbons, and denture paste. Basket trolleys all over the place in a blur of corduroy cloth, grabbing for the toilet rolls, bun bones and denture paste, steel blue eyes and American tan tights ruled this fluorescent place. I made it to the checkout, get there just in time as what seemed 1,000 pensioners jostled in the line. I paid with my credit card, collected all my points, counted all my bruises, Wilts checking all my joints. I walked to the car, put the shopping in the back, turned the key and took a breath, then drove out of my space, only to be cut up by a pensioner with a big smile on her face. And boom.
Great read there, Naomi. I really like the way you got yourself back on track, and you have just such a delightful voice. Now this was fun, and I like how you put in his band based on actual events. That to me, you know, the humorous things that happen in real life, or the frustrating things that we can find humor in, really just to me are the absolute best. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
I thought this was hilarious in how realistic it is. I find grocery shopping a little bit terrifying. people are pushy. I live in kind of a retirement community, and my goodness, those grannies, when they want something, they will take over the aisle, and there's no stopping them. I like that it's compared to a rugby scrum, when they're in line, they're jostled. It's kind of like they're pushed all over the place. I like the false start in the race. Someone went first. And the grabbing for toilet rolls, that feels pretty relevant in the panic,
right,
of the last couple of years. I feel like this is always the case to a certain extent, but there was a lot of panic buying at the beginning of COVID. And then around here, when there were the forest fires and the roads were cut off, then there was panic buying again. And then we had a flood that disconnected us from some of our suppliers. And again, crazy panic buying. So it's been kind of intense with like the all these silver-haired grannies fighting over the stuff, and this captures the intensity of grocery shopping the last couple of years.
It really does, and you're right, and it's oftentimes the grannies that get the most intense. And panic buying, I understand to a certain degree, you know, especially if it's something like you don't know exactly what's going to be happening, like the beginning of COVID, you know, kind of understandable. It's like, okay, we don't know exactly what's going on, or unexpected flooding. But I swear to goodness, every single year we have winter storms in Wisconsin, and every single year people panic buy as if they think we're going to be stuck in the snow for the rest of our lives. And it's just crazy. But this is great. And Naomi, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I just love the pushing along my trolley, 3 wheels, one astray. You know, you always get those shopping carts with 3 wheels that work. They go straight, and there's one that goes all lopsided. That's the only one left, the darn thing. And then weaving through the shoppers, blood boiling. And then the car, the stock race, car race behind, and 30 grannies, you know, waiting for the checkered flag to begin the frantic race. Yeah, this is really, really well written all through, you know, just hilarious piece. So bravo,
Steve
Kane, for this piece. Yeah.
Absolutely.
The blue hair brigade. And they do have like that blue hair, right?
Right, that kind of
that
like
dyed hair.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, yep, exactly. And I really like that you brought up that part about how the one wheel that's all wonky, like there's 3 wheels that work and one that doesn't, and it just always seems to be that way. And someone dropped a box of eggs, false start, that they were off. I like how this has like that whole like supermarket sweep game show type of feel to it. No one seems to give a care or get out of the way, some sort of hypnotic trance on their go slow holiday. Yeah, wonderful rhyme and flow and great humor and just very well done. And all right, Afasiana, what do you got for us next?
I'm going to read one by Victoria Frost. And here we go, Capturing the Shrew. Anne stood within the kitchen, her coffee straight up black, with thoughts of sweet creamer, creamer when she heard scurrying to her back. She turned her head quite slowly, and from the corner of her eye, she saw a large black spot that made her want to cry. It moved around all hasty. She thought, was it a roach? But noted it was fuzzy and turned slowly to approach. A mouse, she said. Oh, it's so cute. And how'd you end up here? So she followed it to the cabinet where it quickly disappeared. Perhaps there is a problem. Perhaps it was a rat. Perhaps we need an office snake or an office cat. It made its way up to the front and underneath a chair. It crawled under a reception's desk with Patty unaware. It thought perhaps that it could hide, that it could have a rest. But office women don't take lightly furry office pests. A glass came down around it and scooted it back out. The women plotted quietly. No one dared to shout. They had to find a way to to turn that silly cup. And with an empty folder, they finally scooped it up. The game was finally over. Communally, they knew that with a bit of time and patience, they'd capture the shrew. End poem.
Oh, that was a great reading. A wonderful write. It's great to see Victoria's sense of humor. I think it's a great idea for a show topic that she had was to bring out the humor writes. And I see in her hand, she says, in honor of my coworkers, Ann, Patty, and the visiting office shrew. So, again, humor based on real life, very cool. And Naomi, your thoughts?
I'm just reading her comment here that it was a true event. From the day that seems crazy and silly inspired a bit. So this was a true thing that happened. So they really captured a mouse, I guess, in the office where she worked. Yeah, this is great rhythm all through that just drew you into the story all along. And it just flowed so well. So great work, Victoria, on this write.
Absolutely. Well said there. And Aphasiana, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
I really enjoyed this. She had such a quirky way of describing it where she turns her head quite slowly, and then she sees it. I can just imagine that, like that kind of startle when she sees the black spot, and then the not sure what it is kind of feeling. Was it a roach? Was it a mouse? And it ends up being a shrew. My husband and I have this joke because there was one time where I thought there was a mouse, and it was just my phone charger. No, it was my computer charger. But it was just like the, because there's like that little box in between where it plugs into the wall and where it plugs. Anyway, it moved because his foot touched the cord, and I thought it was a mouse. So we now call my computer charger the mouse, because I just like screamed and jumped up on the couch, and he was like, what? So that just reminded me of that when she's like, I'm not sure what it is. I really liked when it says, but office women don't take lightly furry office pets. Just the way that she describes, like, we weren't going to be calm about it. it's like, it's saying it from a third-person perspective, but at the same time, you can tell her own views, her own perspective of it is in there. The women plotted quietly. No one dared to shout because they don't want to startle it. I love this, and it feels so real. When I worked in the Salmon Arm Library, we had a chipmunk come in one day, and it was amazing the adventure we have. I mean, my current library, we actually had mice, quite a few mice for a little while. People leave food and books in the weirdest place. Like, there was someone who had a slice of, like, Kraft cheese as a bookmark. Like, the like,
oh,
plasticky.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, yeah. And they're like, how come there's a mouse? And I'm like, look at your book. that's why. I really like the way that this is handled. She has such a quirky way of expressing it. Love it.
She really does. It's clever. That was a great comment. Now, when you were talking about people and leaving the weirdest things in the book, there was actually, and I kid you not, this is true, a friend of ours, like years ago, had given us a full deer. And, so I had to clean it, but I didn't know how to clean a deer. And this was back when, I didn't really have access to the internet. So I went to the library and I bought a book on how to clean a deer carcass. And then checked out. And then another one on venison recipes. So I got the deer all, like, cut up and all that stuff, did some cooking,
And by the time I was done, there was blood splattered on both books.
Yeah, we wouldn't take that back. That's a biohazard.
They probably threw it up. Well, you know, it's funny because I think they didn't, I don't know what it was because, you know, well, they never called me about it, but I returned them, but I returned them by dropping them in the drop off, which was horrible, but yeah.
Oh, they get blood on everything.
At least it wasn't a book, How to Hide the Body. Oh, what was that, Naomi?
It makes me think of the, you know, I'm so clumsy to start off with, but I'm also, my dates, oh my gracious, my dates. I have the weirdest dates. And, you know, I warn the men, you know, like, okay, something's going to happen here. But one of the weirdest dates I had, like, I had this guy come, you know, all the way from Ontario, so he doesn't speak a word of English. And I'm in the restaurant with him. And, of course, my students are in the restaurant working, you know, my students that have grown up and that are, so there's the students come towards me and they're screaming in French, you know, Miss Naomi, Miss Naomi. And there's a snake in the kitchen. There's a snake and she's just hollering away. And then my date, who doesn't understand a word of English, is just sitting on the bench there, the bench of the restaurant. You're looking at me with big eyes. And so, and they know that I don't have it. I'm not scared of snakes or anything or mice or anything because I was born in the country. So I follow her in. I don't say a word, you know. She's hysterical. So I follow her into the kitchen, and I grab the snake. You know how you have to know where to grab them so that they don't bite you, you know, in the back of the neck, you know, so that they can't turn around and bite you. And so I pass back, you know, through the restaurant with this grass snake in my hand, passed by the guy that my date, and he's there staring at me with this snake in my hand, you know, and I walk towards the door, and I open the door, and I go out, you know, to put the snake in the grass, you know, farther, and then I come back and sit down, and he's just looking at me, he's like, what the hell?
Oh my gosh.
But that was one of the weirdest dates I've been on. But I've been on worse ones than that. But anyway, that was one of the craziest ones.
Oh my gosh.
So
that
anyway, I didn't see the guy again.
Well, I think some guys would be impressed by a woman that could handle a snake like that.
Oh, boy. No, but it's what happened after. It's because we went up to Quebec City, and then I kind of slipped on the bar stool, and anyway, the glasses went all flying, and a piece of glass flew and stuck in this guy's side.
Anyway,
that was another date that went all high wire on me.
Oh, too funny.
Oh, yeah. Anyway.
Oh, man. Well, I'm glad you shared that story with us. But I really enjoyed this poem by Victoria. I like that it's based off a true event. And I too liked the part where it says, but office women don't take lightly furry office pets. I also like how the title is a play on Taming of the Shrew by Shakespeare. I thought that was really clever. And, you know, it's just a fun write all the way through and very well done. And Naomi, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I thought I already commented, didn't I?
Oh, did you?
I think I did, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay. Now, there's an idea. Fabiana said, Naomi, you could write a book about your dates gone bad. That would be a funny book.
Well, I write comedy. I do write comedy pieces. But, you know, they're long, so I don't put them up. But I put a few up, but, you know, they're long. So, but I do write comedy, you know. So
that's why it could be a book.
Yeah, that's it. Because I do have the weirdest things happen to me, you know. Yeah. Like driving my car into weird places too, and I'm the worst driver, so oh my gracious. Those things happen to me when I drive too.
Oh, crazy fun.
Pam, will you read your poem now?
Oh, absolutely. And you have to imagine I'm a guy when I'm reading this. And this is How to Write Big Books by War and Peace. And it goes like this. Hello and welcome to the National Big Society. At the NBS, we believe that as many things as possible should be larger than average, and that includes your nightly reading material. I'm War and Peace, president of the NBS Northwest Chapter and author of How to Write Big Books. Now, I can see some of you thinking, that man doesn't look any taller than 5'2". What the hell does he know about big? Well, first of all, I'm actually 5'4" tall. And second of all, it's pretty damn obvious the majority of you have not seen me naked. But in all seriousness, it's not what I have in my pants, but what I have here in my cranium, an impressive intellectual vocabulary, and here behind my sternum, a heart that is determined to do away with words, small ideas, and small books, to put a new spin on an old classic. I like big books, and you other readers can't deny when those large pages open, you'll be groping as your vocabulary's on the rise. Now, before I let you go so you can consume the large platters of food and tall glasses of beverages served by well-endowed women of considerable width, I'd like to read to you an excerpt from my book, which I promise will be the only microscopic section of the evening, unless, of course, some of you gentlemen take your pants off, not that I believe every rumor I hear. Now, let us proceed into the grandiosity of macro authorship, of which I am an authority. Hello, dear reader. If by chance you have taken the time to open the gargantuan pages of this book, it means either one of you have an overwhelming desire to learn about the art of writing big books, or this was given to you as a gift. And you, the cynical skeptic, are thinking, what use is it to me to learn to write big books? After all, hasn't the reading and writing of small books served me well all these years? I would like to propose at this time that you read this novel, or at the very least skim through several of the pages, digest with gusto the knowledge offered within the set of ink of bold print. Perhaps you will come to appreciate the many benefits of having learned how to write a book of sizable portions, which includes not only bragging rights, but also the potential to climb the ladder to success in both your work and love life. After all, who isn't impressed by a man whose mind is overflowing with a vast ocean of knowledge and vocabulary? Yes, my curious consumer, you, no matter the size of your physical attributes, can be the next big wave that everyone wants to ride. Chapter 1. To write big books, you must first know you are entitled to write big books. You must get rid of all negativity
If someone calls you a pompous windbag, remove them from your social circle. A creator of humongous literature has no need for such narrow-minded, judgmental buffoonery. Be sure you have several shelves of scribed work on a variety of subjects. Remember, the thesaurus and dictionary are your best friend, and being multilingual will be an asset to your new and improved self. And in closing, my fellow lovers of the stupendously colossal, I leave you with this thought. Never use an itty-bitty, teeny-tiny word when a plethora of comedious compositions are begging to be released into the cosmos of humanity. And if anyone should happen to criticize your penning and adoration of big books, at such time it is acceptable protocol to inform them that they may apply direct labial pressure to your glutinous maximus. End poem. And Ophasiana, would you leave comments, please?
Yes. First of all, apply direct labial pressure to your glutinous maximus is amazing. I think I might need to use that phrase in a battle at some point. quote Pam. I think this is really hilarious, like hyperbole, and that it would be a giant ego of a character who wrote this. So not only are his books large, but his head is pretty big. this is fun. I liked that you did the song. I like big books and I cannot lie. I'm not going to lie. I have rapped that at a story time and the kids thought I was crazy, which I am, but you know.
too funny.
This is so funny, and I feel like I could be one of the waitresses with the, like, too wide, but it's okay because we like big things. I don't know. I think this is really funny. Well done. Naomi, what did you think?
Thank you.
I love when you start chapter one. To write big books, you must first know you are entitled to write big books. You must get rid of all negativity. If someone calls you pompous windbag, remove them from your social circle. So I love how the book starts out, you know. It's just so, matter of fact there, you know. Just go ahead and, you know, write them because you're entitled to write them. Yeah, this is so well written, Pam, all the way down, you know, and just so funny. And just a well written piece all through here. From the title, National Big Society, the NBS, and having a president of the NBS, the author of How to Write Big Books. Yeah, and all the part about, you know, the you didn't see me naked, and but in all seriousness, not what you have in your pants, but what you have in your cranium, and you go all the way down. So it's so witty. Very witty and cleverly written. So a great, great write here. Great humor. Just an amazing write.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And what do you got for us next, Ophasiana?
Our last poem will be one by Rex, Intimidus Rex. And I think it's Naomi's turn to read.
To read Rex.
I know he's a tongue twister sometimes.
Oh, boy. Is it up?
Yep.
Okay, wait a minute. I'll refresh. Oh, yeah. Okay, I see it there. Okay. porcelain proud and princess perfect, hard-edged and grisly. I'm a chew the fat kind of guy, 'cause to think coy as she opens wide and takes my ablutions, swallow 'em whole. No warning, no prep in discussions, hard-pressed where liquid gold turns to brown nose politics, burning through the arse of last night's tequila and taco tampon feasts. Bring new meaning to never shitting where one eats, but most mitigate their adiosity by talking anyway. That's where a fool and his girlfriend are soon parted. And I likes a woman drunk, pissed off and ready to fuck, 'cause her man's cockfight came up short and she's really feathered around the edges. Morning muses on a warm and wet cunny when she yells, "Are you done yet?" Would have been quicker if'n I had a bit it. So gonna swipe my ass with the story and get back to letting her ride me till my bones break and we're a puddle of whiskey dowsing flaming sheets. Wait a minute. Flaming sheets. Note to Corona, I used a blank piece of paper on my ass, and you'll find my words nestled between Miss January's tits and the article on Better Homes and Gardens with the little blue pill. End poem.
Great read there, Naomi. I have to say, I really enjoy the way Rex can get crass and do the toilet humor, the you know, bodily function humor, but still come across as almost elegant-like. This was definitely great, hard-hitting humor. Brings new meaning to never shin where one eats, but mostly mitigates their idiocy by taking away that where the fool and his girlfriend are soon parted. You know, it's like, I feel like this whole poem is just basically saying, you know what, you're either making love or you're shitting. You're not doing both at once, but, or maybe you are, because what the hell? You know, let's kill two birds in one stone. Note to Corona. I love that. I mean, I used a blank piece of paper on my ass, and you'll find my words nestled between Miss January's tits. That was great. That was great. And no warning, no prep in discussing hard press where liquid gold turns to brown nose politics. Ooh, yep. You can just you feel like there was a lunchtime meal. A feast for the senses that went way too wrong. So excellent humor and very well done. I really enjoyed this. And Afasiana, your thoughts?
I kind of wondered if the sex and stuff wasn't actually about what it seems like on the surface, because there is that note to Corona. I kind of wonder when it says, get back to letting her ride me till my bones break, and that idea of going into bed and you know, being fucked, I think it's more like he's being fucked over by Corona, like he's really sick. Like, it's actually like a complaint. I could just be making that up, but I think it might have a double meaning where, yes, it has kind of like the sensual sort of, but also, you know, potty humor. But I think it's actually the sickness is screwing him, In the sense that it's like in the bad way. but that's just how I took it.
I like that. I like that. And that's the thing with Rex's poetry is it often does have layered meanings. So really great observation there. And Naomi, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to take his title, Porcelain Proud. That must be like trying to be all proud sitting on the porcelain toilet there. And and Princess Perfect, you know. And then I just laughed at Better Homes and Gardens because my mother reads those magazines. So I imagine the calendar with Miss January there on the calendar. And, you know, and then the Better Homes and Gardens, you know, which you know, the little little house, perfect housewife reads, you know, and the two together just makes such a, like, makes humor right there, you know, those two images stuck together there. And then you end it, you know, with words nestled between the two and that little blue pill, you know. So that's just like laughing at that, you know, the idea of Better Homes and Gardens and, you know, the Miss January. And, of course, you know, you have the little blue pills in those houses, too, and you have those calendars probably popped up in the garages, you know.
So gosh.
So, you know, the sarcastic humor of Rex, I think, comes out in that. And the imagine the white picket fence house, you know, the perfect little housewife, and, you know, the her husband with the calendar with the nudes there, and, you know, and him using that little blue pill to get it up, you know. So it's just sarcastic all the way through this writing, and just in your face, I think. So just an amazing write by Rex. Yeah.
Yes, yes. You're absolutely right. There is a great sarcastic tone to it. And I'm glad you brought up the part about the magazine, because that was great in the idea that it just makes fun of the fact that people always seem to have magazines as reading material in their bathroom. So,
yeah,
excellent comment there. And I would like to say thank you to Afasiana for co-hosting with me tonight. And, you know, thank you, Naomi, for calling in. I really appreciate you both. Thank you to everyone who contributed rights to the shows. You are all truly appreciated. And Afasiana, what kind of contest do you have for upcoming shows?
For Part Sinner, Part Saint, I have Surface Pressure, which is actually a song from the Disney film Encanto, which is really fun. I mean, I'm a bit of a child at heart, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was really clever, and it had quite the diversity of characters, not just in race, but like Louisa, who's the character in this song, is not your traditional Disney princess. She's this big, strong, like physically fit woman. But the thing is that she has all this pressure to always be the one doing everything. And it's like she's cracking underneath the pressure emotionally, and she finally tells her sister about it. So the prompts are, I'm pretty sure I'm worthless if I can't be of service. And who am I if I can't carry it all? And then I have a clip of, or actually I have the video of the whole song linked there, so you can just write to the song in general. But basically it's about feeling the pressure of having to always be the one doing everything and saving everything, and you seem like the strong one, but maybe you're not feeling strong. And then for Double Helix, Dexter has a contest called The Pleasures of Life, and he's just asking that you write about the little pleasures that make you happy, whether it's like listening to the Beatles or eating a BLT or like driving a cool classic car. Whatever it is that excites you, we want to hear about it and get to know you better. So that's the Duke of St. Paul, Dex Bailey, who hosts Double Helix with me. It's his contest, but I'm going to be a part of it too.
Oh,
yeah,
awesome.
Cool.
Those both sound like great ideas. And, of course, everyone, make sure to keep an eye out on the contests and topic boards put up by our late-night poets, hosts, and hostesses. They're always worth checking out. And thank you, everyone. Wonderful show tonight, and have a good night, everyone.
Good night.